Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset, and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests in all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is a long overdue podcast, somebody that I've had on my list to do an interview with for the longest of times. Today's guest is Roz Purcell. Roz puts out incredible content online. I've been following her Instagram for ages. She puts out really authentic content that breaks down just a lot of those barriers that Instagram versus reality. And I've been looking forward to having this chat since we set up this podcast. In today's episode, we go through her backstory. So her recovery from disordered eating and eating disorders to where she is now, and how therapy helped her with that guilt shame cycle around food. We also talk about the importance of protecting your environment and setting up clear boundaries and why you need to work on your mindset above all else. We also dive into what is a current passion, actually a long-term passion, but definitely a current one for Roz, and that's hiking and how being present and that works as her form of meditation. Love this podcast, jumping around a lot of different topics based on mindset, based on her background, based on her history. So I'm really, really grateful we got to have this chat. So without further ado, here is a great conversation with an absolutely wonderful person, Roz Purcell, on what the problem with diet culture, disordered eating, and creating a positive relationship with yourself. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am delighted to be joined today with my guest, Rosanna Purcell. Roz is a blogger and number one best-selling author. She began blogging at naturalbornfeeder.com in 2013 to document her love of cooking and share her recipes. Roz puts out incredible content on her social channels all around food, hiking, and wellness in general. So I'm looking forward to talking all things health, wellness, and mindset in today's episode. Roz, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I've been following your content for ages. You have such a positive message on social media, and we'll definitely get into that as we go through the podcast. But before we do, take us back a little bit to what got you into health and wellness. I know you started Natural Born Feeder in 2013, and it was just to document your love of cooking and sharing recipes. And I know that you won the 2010 Miss Universe Ireland Beauty Pageant back in, obviously, 2010. Was that your introduction into the world of kind of health and wellness, or was it, did it come from somewhere else?
Well, I grew up in Tipperary. I'm actually here at the moment. We live in the middle of nowhere. Anytime I bring somewhere to my house, they're like, when you said you live in the middle of the nowhere, I didn't literally think that you actually lived in the middle of nowhere. We live on Sheevnamon Mountain. So my upbringing was very, very much, you know, around getting out into the outdoors, not being on... Well, we weren't even allowed to have phones back then, so we were like 15, but not being on our phone, not watching TV, and just like learning how to cook. Like one of the first things I learned to do, like even when I first started walking, was to start baking, like baking with my aunties, my parents. And in turn, I guess they were training us to cook for them and be their slaves, basically. So I've always, any photos of me growing up, I was always cooking. I was always outside. I was never inside. So I definitely think my upbringing started my journey in terms of being a very outdoorsy person and just loving the whole aspect of food, like getting to cook it. Food for me is something that I think brings people together as well. Like there's a whole, I think in general, like I think we look at food as very much black and white. For me, food is a multitude of things. You know, it can allow you to be creative. It can allow you to enjoy something. It can allow you to bring people together and create conversations. So I've always had a huge passion for food and cooking. And I think one of the biggest parts about that was actually cooking for other people. And it was almost my only way as a child, not having any income, to give something to someone.
Yeah, the line I associate with you, and I love it, is, you know, use whole food to live a whole life. Again, I love that approach when it comes to overall nutrition and well-being. But talk about your food philosophy, because as you said there, it brings people together. There's the whole emotional element around it. But when it comes to your kind of food philosophy, because of, you know, the best-selling books and the cookbooks, what would you, or how would you break down your food philosophy for somebody who's not familiar with your approach?
Well, my food philosophy has definitely changed. Like even how you're saying there, whole foods to live a whole life. You know, I myself have loosened up when it comes to food. You know, I came from a background of obviously having such enjoyment in food, having no restrictions with food, but at the same time, making everything from scratch. I then entered a modeling industry where I started disordered eating, and I went through 6 or 7 years in diet culture and disordered eating before I got help. So I guess my approach has definitely changed to a bit more just enjoying what you're putting in your mouth. And, you know, I think sometimes people can preach about being really conscious of what you eat, but sometimes you can't be overly conscious either, because I've seen the effects of that as well. You know, I've seen what eating disorders do to people and how diet culture captures people. So I definitely think my approach and my philosophy to food is definitely always changing, number one. And I definitely think I'm at a stage in my life where food is just something that is a huge part of our life. We shouldn't see it as good or bad or something that should be guilty or not guilty. It's just something that is fundamental and should be enjoyed where it can be.
Yeah, I had that same experience with disordered eating back when I used to compete in bodybuilding. It was very much binge restrict cycles for me. What did it look like for you when it came to your disordered eating, Ross?
Well, when I first started, when I first started noticing my weight, I was about 13 or 14. And it was actually just because I was quite athletic. And my best friend had these lovely slender legs. And that was at the time when we were watching, you know, those kind of 1990 stars on TV, and that kind of heroin chic look was very in fashion. And I remember being like, oh, I just wish I had skinny legs, which is, you know, 13, 14, like, why was I even thinking that? But it was just from what I was consuming on TV and in the media. But it wasn't until I started modeling, and I guess people started telling me to tone up, lose weight. I was at a stage in my life where I was 18, so I was going to college, so my weight was fluctuating. You know, I was going out partying, and I was, you know, for the first time going away into a household where I could buy my own food. So my weight was fluctuating, and people made a huge, I suppose, ordeal about pointing that out to me. And it was the first time in my life where I suppose I felt a huge sense of shame about my body because I couldn't keep it one way. So that kind of started leading into diet culture and feeding into that whole, you know, what was the most popular diet, going to cut out carbs, all those kind of very generic how everyone starts the diet, which led to, like what you said, binging and purging. From Monday to Friday, I would really, really overly restrict. And then on the weekends, I would totally binge, feel really bad about it on Monday morning, purge. And that cycle continued for a long time. It wasn't until I went modeling in New York where it got a little bit more serious, because I was also living in a house with models, and I could just see that they just restricted 24/7. And anytime I would binge around them, I just had this extra sense of guilt. And that was not their fault. That was just because I was in an environment where that just was really not, I suppose, tolerated in that sense. So when I moved home from New York, and not really getting where I wanted to in New York because of my weight, because I could never get small enough, even though I was tiny when I was there, it was the shame that led me to go further, which led me into anorexia and orthorexia. And yeah, so that's what mine looked like. And that was just 24/7, every day of the week restriction and extreme overtraining.
With guilt and shame, I know it's an absolute Pandora's box of a question, but I'm very curious from your experience, because there's a lot of people listening who have either been down that path, they have their own version of disordered eating, and it's something that they're trying to kind of come to terms with themselves. But in terms of your recovery, what were one or two of the things that helped you the most? Was it switching back towards that whole food approach initially? Was it surrounding yourself with supportive people? Was it therapy? What kind of got you from zero to one when it came to handling or managing that kind of guilt and shame, particularly as you came out of that disordered eating disordered pattern?
I would love to say that it was just one thing and I could bottle it up and sell it to people and not even give it to people, because, you know, it's such a tough place to be when you're with an eating disorder and you're struggling to get away from counting your calories, or, you know, being obsessive with even my fitness pal or looking at the scales every single day and worrying about putting on weight or changing size. I have to say, when it came to guilt and shame, therapy was really fundamental in my recovery. And it was more so about, I remember when my therapist had a kind of analogy for it, and he was like, okay, you have a basket of apples, and each apple is something you've been taught about your body and how it should look. So what we need to do is we need to empty that basket before we start refilling it with rational thoughts about your body and real thoughts about your body. Because what it's filled with now is what people want you to believe to make money off you, and what society wants you to think about your body. And it was probably, this was, you know, this was, oh, when I first started going to therapy, I was 24. So this was, you know, 7 years ago. So it was kind of the first time someone explained it like that, you know, in a very, I think, just black and white way, say, like, people are making money off you hating yourself and dieting, and like, this is what people want you to think, you know. This whole body type, it changes every 10 years. Like, how are we meant to keep up with this? Your body's meant to change. You're a growing woman. And these were things I just hadn't opened my mind to or listened to. And I was just so consumed with trying to be the perfect body type. I could not see anything else around it. So therapy really helped with me breaking down why I felt guilty around food, why letting go of the shame I felt around my body. And ultimately, I think helping me lose the fear of gaining weight. Now, that took a long time and it wasn't a linear recovery whatsoever. And it's something I get a lot of questions about. You know, people message me saying, like, I'm in recovery at the moment. I'm finding weight gain extremely, extremely hard. And it is. It really is. And like, I'm like 7 years in now. And it was probably only on year three or four that I was really okay with it. And that might seem like a really long recovery, but I'm so happy I stuck it out, because it's totally changed how I view myself, how I view food, how I enjoy opportunities that come to me in life, how I enjoy relationships, how I enjoy just every single moment of the day, because it doesn't revolve around my weight.
I love that. And that getting over that fear of gaining weight, I think you said something really important there for people, Roz, is that it's not a linear recovery. There's going to be steps back and steps forward. And I think when people can take that perspective and hear somebody who's came out the other side on the days or the weeks or potentially the months even where they feel like they've been set back, it at least it gives them the inspiration and the motivation to push through and realize, well, this isn't necessarily a linear journey. You're not always just going to get better in that progress. Sometimes there's going to be days and weeks and potentially months where you're stepping backwards. But when it comes to diet culture, you mentioned it there, particularly around when you were in the States, again a little bit when you come back here. But when it comes to diet culture, because this is still pretty prevalent, although I think it's a little bit better in the last 5, 6, 7 years, I think your content particularly and other people I've spoken with and other people in the health and wellness industry who are drawing attention away from the negative aspects of diet culture in terms of health and wellness. But what's something that you wish you knew back then that you know now when it comes to diet culture in general?
Well, first of all, I just want to say before I get into this, like, if you want to start a diet, it's your body, your choice. Like, you know, I'd never judge someone for taking one on. I share my experience because, like that, like, I just wasted so many years doing it. Like, I look back and I'm like, oh my God, I could have been enjoying food and enjoying exercise just in a completely different perspective. And I guess one thing I wish I really knew was, can I give two?
You can, yeah.
Okay. Number one, there's actually massive multi-million companies out there wanting you to hate yourself and feeding you this body type and feeding you this narrative that we can be better, we can be smaller, you shouldn't have cellulite, all these different things to just make money. It's not even for, like, people promote it and put it in as a box where they used to as health. They're literally just making money off you. Number two would be, carbs are such an amazing part of life. Carbs are fuel. Like, I know for myself, the diets that I kind of grew up with were cutting out carbs. And I didn't eat carbohydrates for 6 or 7 years. And, you know, when I did, I binged them. So I didn't even get to enjoy them because there was so much shame and guilt around them. And now, like, my diet is predominantly carbohydrates. I see what they do for me. They fuel me to get up mountains. Like, they make me feel good. They're so enjoyable. And I feel so sad that of all the pizzas and pastas and breads I missed out on. You know what I mean? Like, it's a simple thing. Like, it's the bread, the pasta, the pizza, all the beautiful things, like the potato that I just, you know, diet culture trained me to not have.
Do you think, just from your experience, because I know particularly with social media, we can kind of go into our own bubble, and that's a very positive thing. I've had people like the Happy Pair on the podcast that when I ask them a question on what the world is doing, they're like, not really sure. We're kind of in our own little positivity bubble here. But have you seen much of a change on that since you started Natural Born Feeder in terms of people's relationship with food in general, relationships to their body, more of a body positive movement. Have you seen that change firsthand with the people that are following you? Because you have a massive following online. Or is it largely the same and you're just trying to create a space online where that positivity is consistently showing up?
Well, I'm a big preacher for, you know, you're in control of your own social media. So don't follow people that, you know, make you feel like shit or that won't aid your journey. So for me, when I was recovering, unfollowed or muted a lot of accounts that, you know, really were selling, I suppose, weight loss and who were sharing their restrictions and overtraining and things that just wouldn't have aided me, you know, to get better. They might have like propelled me. And look, I've nothing against those people, but there's certain times in your life where you can't consume different types of media because it's not going to fundamentally bring you to where you want to be. So I guess in a way I would say my social media feed is a feed that I know I can look at and it's either informative, it's positive, or it's just funny, you know. So I'm kind of definitely unaware if there's people out there still living that kind of 2010 lifestyle and promoting that, because probably like the happy pair, I'm very much away from that. And while I have been in recovery for eating disorder for 7 years, one thing I do want to say to people is, you know, like you go to counseling sessions, they're not going to fix you, you know, they don't just get rid of your problem. They give you tools to manage it. And one of the biggest tools I was taught was to protect your environment. And that's kind of what I do when it comes to social media and what I consume.
What's your personal relationship like with social media? Do you have a good relationship with it? Do you have, like, for example, I have restrictions around social media. I'm generally not on it at the weekends. I'm not on it for the first 2 hours or last 2 hours in the day. I kind of have restrictions around it. What's your personal relationship like with social media?
I would say my personal relationship with social media was very good. I do think lockdown kind of flipped that on its head a little bit. But I think it's because I felt like I needed to be online a bit more because we weren't out living our lives, and my life became who I was online because I was just living in a house. Like I was really in lockdown for so long. So it's only now I'm kind of separating that again and being like, that wasn't helpful to how I live my life. And I'm someone who would always preach like your offline life is better and should be much stronger than your online life. And your online life should only, you know, complement your offline life, if that makes sense. Whereas I definitely think my wires got crossed and locked in. And that was just because I think people were consuming more media and content. So I felt the pressure to produce more and to share more and to be online more, where I think, you know, if you're someone who's online, you have a platform, you're no use to anyone if you're completely burnt out and you're not enjoying it either. So I definitely in the last few months have taken more time off it and taken a step back and not feeling the need that I need to post or be there the whole time or answer every single question or DM, and just having that kind of boundary with it. So if I'm being honest, you know, I definitely went through a period of the last 2 years where I didn't have a good relationship with it, but thankfully I kind of noticed it and kind of put, like yourself, some boundaries in place that it doesn't take over my life or my life doesn't become my online life.
That gives me a really nice little segue there, because you talked earlier about protecting your environment, which I definitely want to come back to, because I think that's so important for nearly everybody listening to protect what's around you in terms of what you're consuming, who you're around, where you are. And it kind of links in nicely with boundaries. What does protecting your environment look like to you, Roz?
Well, I think first of all, it starts with in your house, you know, like who are you surrounding yourself with, what kind of TV shows you're watching, what media are you consuming on your phone, you know, are you eating foods that you enjoy, are you cooking foods that you enjoy, are you setting yourself up with a good routine to succeed or to fail? And then you can look out onto other aspects, like are you working with people that are positive and that are good to work with, are you, you know, is there anyone negative in your circle, your group of friends that, I'm not talking about cutting people out, but maybe you need to talk to them and help them. Like, it's all just becoming aware of who you're around, what you're consuming in terms of media, watching, like all your senses, eating. And I guess how I approached it at the very start was the small things I do every single day, like looking at my phone, watching TV, going to the gym, like was I doing things that I really enjoyed?
I think that's really useful for people, because they'll all draw their own conclusions on what they need to include in their life in order to kind of protect their own environment.
Yeah. You know, you bring it into work as well. Like I always I look at it, obviously, now I'm really lucky. I actually, my best friend is my manager. So we get along so, so well. But everyone you work with, like whether it's brands, it's clients. And look, I know I'm probably sitting here, people are like, well, it's well for you. You can pick who you work with. But is there a way, if there's someone in work or there's someone in your gym or someone in your environment who makes you feel bad, who's not a good person for your journey, to limit interactions? You know, we can't just cut people out, but can we limit them? Can we find a better way of working with them? And that just takes time, you know? And like, do I have it absolutely perfect? No, but I'm really aware of what's good for me and what's not.
Yeah, I think that's so important for people to realize that sometimes you can't just cut people, but if you can limit your interaction with them, that can reap massive dividends for your mental health.
Like sometimes it could also be a case that if someone's giving me like not, I don't say good energy, but like if I'm having a negative interaction with someone, sometimes I have to look and think, is that coming from me? Do I have something, you know, that I'm projecting? Like, am I envious of that person? Am I, you know, have I worked with someone similar to them in the past and it hasn't been a good experience? And that's why I'm thinking this won't be one, you know? So I do also think it's really important to not just blame everyone else around you, like also question yourself and why you're feeling those ways about different things in your life.
With that, and anytime I hear anybody say, well, is this coming from me? I call them purple polar bears. You know, if somebody calls you a purple polar bear, you forget about it instantly. Whereas if somebody says, you know, you're fat or skinny, you're stupid, and it triggers, you're like, oh, there's something within me, an insecurity that's flared up within me. But it takes a lot of self-awareness to be able to even pull it back to yourself. Is that something you developed, Roz, or is that something you've always had?
Oh, I definitely didn't always have that. Absolutely not. Like if you met me in my early 20s, you'd be like, she's so unself-aware, you know, and I definitely had a massive ego. And I, you know, that was one thing when I was recovering from an eating disorder. I remember working with a counselor and he was like, yeah, okay, so we're really going far with the whole, you know, food and body. Now we need to work on your ego. And I was like, what? And, you know, and for me, it was like I had to be the best at everything. Like I wouldn't even try anything if I knew I wasn't going to be great at it. Or if I tried something and I wasn't good at it, I wouldn't try it again. It would ruin my day. And if things didn't go my way, you know, it would propel into ruining my day because I just had this huge ego that I had to be amazing at everything I did. So that's definitely something I needed to shed just to, in terms of challenge myself, do more things. I had a massive ego that I needed to deal with. And I think I was delighted that my therapist pointed it out because he taught me quite a lot about in terms of being really self-aware. Now, look, as with anything, I'm not a perfectionist at this. I'm sure I'm definitely not perfect at it. But I from my younger self, I definitely have come a long way. Yeah. And you know what? I'll try anything. And even if I'm crap at it, I'll keep going with it because, you know, that's the whole beauty of life is trying new things and growing at it. And, you know, if you only do things you're good at, you're never challenging yourself and you're never growing.
With that best at everything mindset, I won't ask where that kind of rooted from because that's a whole different podcast in itself and probably not something we can kind of go deep on because there can be a whole host of potential answers. But when it comes to advice you'd offer your younger self, apart from that you don't have to be the best at everything and, you know, maybe manage your ego, I definitely needed that advice when I was 18 or 19. What advice would you offer your younger self if you could go back?
To my younger self, number one, there's no need to be competitive with other women. No matter what society tells you, there's room for all women to grow and succeed. And I think, you know, I went to an all-girls school and we kind of thrived at this competitive atmosphere. And I presume this happens in all boys' schools too. But I definitely think even when it comes to media, they pitch women up against each other. You know, there might have been at the time when I was growing up, maybe only one woman represented on a panel or things like that. So there was this huge sense that like, you were in competition with your girlfriends and your sisters. And I really would love to go back to my younger self and be like, that's just not true. Number two, I think it would be that obviously, you know, diet culture will absolutely mess you up. It'll wreck your body. It'll wreck your head. And you can eat well, you can train well, but if you do not have a healthy mind, none of that matters. Absolutely none of it. And I went for years, people thinking I had like, oh my God, you have the best diet, you exercise the best way, but like my head was all over the place. Like I couldn't leave the house, you know? So, you know, I think it would be to really work on your mind as much as you work out, you know. And that's something I really took for granted, really did, in my teens and 20s. And third would be going out and have more fun. Like, I was, as soon as I turned 18, the legal age to go out and party and have fun and meet my friends, I started working and started developing eating disorders, and I didn't go out. I didn't have fun with my friends. I wouldn't go for a meal. I just wanted to be, have the perfect body and look perfect, that I just didn't even have fun. And I look back and I see people, I see, you know, teenagers going to having fun and early 20s having fun, going holidays with their friends. And I'm like, I didn't get to do any of that because I thought that one night out or one week away with my friends would, you know, completely change who I was.
That's great advice. All three of those, I think, are going to connect with people on different levels. But I do want to pull it back to work on your mind, because for long-term listeners of the podcast will know how important that focus is. And it's a heavy focus of this podcast. But as somebody that was similar, who had chronic issues of mental health between anxiety and depression, more so environmental depression from making bad decisions. I made a lot of mistakes in my life and they were all, you know, I've owned and taken responsibility for them now. But what were some of the tools that supported you with your mindset in particular? For example, you know, for me, it's wellness based, you know, sleeping, eating well, being around loved ones. I had Johan Hari on the podcast a couple of times. He wrote the book Lost Connections, and that book was a life changer for me. It literally, I picked up and moved closer to home, closer to my family, and cut out a couple of people in terms of friends that were around me at the time. So that was very important for me for helping with my mindset. But for you, what were some of the tools that lent yourself to that mindset recovery more so than the physical side?
Well, I guess for me, like, I think everyone has their own way that they find their own thing that is maybe mindful or therapeutic and something that helps them be present. And I guess for me, that's hiking. And it's also baking. And, you know, it used to be playing the piano. I don't do that much anymore. Those things really help me forget what's going on in the world, be completely present and not worry about the past or the future, which is really hard for me. I think a lot of people, you know, worrying about the past and worrying about the future, when you're doing both of those things, it's very hard to live in the now. So hiking and then creating with my hands really helps me just to be in the now and get lost in the moment, if that makes sense, which not a lot of things do that for me. I find it really hard to meditate. I do it. Not very good at it. I'm not gonna put it out there. You know, I think people always ask me, like, oh, how do you meditate? I'm like, look, I'm not good at it. I have tried it and I do still do it. I try to limit my time doing it, so I know when I'm going into it, I only have 2 minutes of it to do. I find with tasks, I find really hard to do. If I give myself a time limit, I know I'll do them every day. So yeah, for me, it's a very once I'm working, I'm doing something that's repetitive, I find that drags me right into the present. And along with that, I think it's just like what you said, I surround myself with really good people. And like yourself, I've made a huge conscious effort to visit home a lot more. When I recovered from my eating disorder, and sorry, I say recovered, I mean, while I was recovering, I don't think you ever, like, not that you don't ever fully recover, but you just manage it better. And while I was recovering, I realized a big part of my eating disorder was never leaving my routine. So I never went home to visit my family or my friends because I would be breaking my routine and I'd be afraid I would eat something that would, you know, make me gain weight. I would not exercise. So I didn't go home a lot. And like that, I lost connections with people. So regaining that was hugely was a big aspect to, I think, bringing me back. You know what? People will say, you know, I'm a different person from my, you know, early 20s to my 30s. In recovery from eating disorder, I actually became the person who I was before my eating disorder. Now, obviously mature, but, you know, the person who just enjoyed things, who loved outdoors, who loved baking and loved meeting new people, was actually really sociable. And while I had an eating disorder, I was an introvert. I didn't have anything. I found speaking to people really difficult, couldn't form relationships. So through recovering and getting proper help with CBTE, I actually became the person I was always meant to be, if that makes sense.
I love that. You refound yourself off the back of coming through it, which I think is an incredible...
I know that sounds really wishy-washy. You know, I totally understand. If some, like, I understand that people might listen to that and be like, oh, whatever. But I was walking with my sister one day, and this was about 2 years ago, and she was like, I hadn't seen you in years, and if I saw you, it was just out of, you know, like family interactions, and you were always really quiet. And then like one day we didn't see you in months, and I'd been doing loads of therapy, doing loads of work, and I'd been actually going out partying with my friends and, like, you know, reconnecting. I came home and she was like, it's like you were Roz again. You were 18-year-old Roz again. And I was like, that's the only way my family could describe it. It's like this eating disorder stole you. You became a different person. And then once you recovered, you were you again.
I love that. And that's, it just shows that you're using that nearly external feedback from your family that, well, I'm on the right path. And I think it's important that people, there's cues out there. There'll be conversations, there'll be feedback from people that you're either on the right path or on the wrong path. And I think just listening out for those cues. So I'm so, like, I'm smiling listening to that, because it's just such an incredible thing to hear. I do want to focus on the hiking though, because this is something that I've been doing a deep dive on your content recently. I was supposed to go up Kilimanjaro last year, but COVID cancelled it. So I was checking out all your hiking and all the places you were recommending, etc. But do you think that hiking and being present, because I do a bit of it myself as well, not as much as you, and again, for anyone that's looking for routes and recommendations, highly recommend checking out all your content for that. But with the being present, do you find that it's a combination of the physical exercise mixed with nature, or is it something completely different that hiking makes you feel present in the moment?
Well, I think the thing about hiking is you're literally putting one foot in front of the other. It's extremely, extremely repetitive. And so much so, I'm concentrating on where I'm putting my feet. So it's bringing me into the present. It's forcefully bringing me into the present, because I'm like, where am I going to put my foot next? I don't want to fall, you know, because usually if I'm doing, I go off and I do loads of lovely, easy hikes as well. And I might go off and think about things when I'm on those trails that are nice and flat and, like, you know, think of all these scenarios in my head. But usually I love, like this morning I was up at 5, I know people hate hearing this sometimes, but I was up at 5 climbing in the Wicklow Mountains with my friend, and we did a really challenging hike. And like, that's why I find hiking is great, because it forces me to be present and really think about what my next move is. And it's not my next move in life, but it's my next move to physically get me somewhere. And I don't think we get to do that much anymore, you know. And I always think hiking is a bit of an analogy for life, because there's some days I go out hiking and I'm just not feeling it, you know, and some days I don't go to the summit. I get 3/4 ways up and I'm not into this anymore. Do you know, I have bad days as well. And I do think hiking teaches you a lot about yourself. And even today I was standing on a kind of cliff edge and I was looking around me, and because I'd been standing for a while because I was waiting for my friend, and I kind of started daydreaming. And then all of a sudden it brought me back to reality and I looked around me, and you just feel so small hiking. And I think you always remember that, you know, and maybe some people don't like thinking about this, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, we're quite small. And not that we're irrelevant or anything like that, but there's a lot of things going on in the world. And even though something might be consuming your mind right now, you're still alive. You're still living. The world is still going on. There's still amazing, beautiful things around you. It's not the end of the world.
I think it's so important. When I went to the Sahara in 2018, I trekked through and ran through the Arctic in 2019, and it just kind of reestablished that philosophy of, you know, evolved monkeys on a floating rock through space. And it just eases all this anxiety that is around the everyday kind of life stuff. And I know not everybody can do that, but you can get it on a hike, out in nature, out challenging yourself physically. Is that the main form of exercise that you're currently doing then? I know you put up gym workouts, etc. on Instagram, but is your main form of exercise hiking based?
I do a lot of gym work as well. Now, not a huge amount. You know, I think pre-COVID, I had a very good balance of lifting weights and hiking. I think now I don't go to the gym just as much, just because 2 years in, still haven't got COVID, I'm still dodging it. But so I'm doing a little bit more hiking now, but I still, you know, lift weights 2-3 days a week. Like, I find that is hugely helpful to my strength when I'm out hiking. I absolutely love lifting weights. Obviously, I've done courses in PT as well. And one thing I wanted to mention earlier and just kind of slipped my mind was a big thing for me in recovery was also, you know, getting a counselor. Number two was going to see a nutritionist or dietitian that gave me a wealth of information about how great carbs are and how you need all fat, carbs and protein in your diet. And obviously, look, it might be hard to find someone that really can help with this. But I think if you approach someone that you have an eating disorder, gave me confidence in food again, to eat it and enjoy it and make sure I was getting enough calories in. But also I went and I did a very short PT course just for myself, which made me understand the importance of rest and, you know, not just running myself into the ground the whole time. So I have a huge respect for lifting heavy weights. I love it. And it'll always be part of my life, because I always think as well, when it comes to fitness, I have this thing where when I'm, you know, 80, I don't care what weight I am on the scales, but I want to be able to get up, go for a walk or go for a run. And I know to do that, I need to be constantly tipping away and making sure I stay strong, I move well, and I get better each day, even if it's just by a tiny percent.
When did you start strength and resistance training? Was that off the back of the recovery? Was it during? Had you always been doing it? Or is it something that you've done more recently in the last 3, 4, 5 years?
When I had an eating disorder, I kind of was very much into running. And I wouldn't lift heavy weights because, you know, we have to remember that was at the time when people were like, if you lift heavy weights, you'll be big and bulky. Anyway, so it was kind of, I think I kind of dabbled in it a bit. Like I would go to different trainers and I might do some heavy weights, but I could never really lift that heavy because I was never eating enough. So I was kind of trying to lift heavy in a broken body that didn't move well. So then it was really through recovery, I started lifting weights, and not even heavy, sorry, they're not heavy, but and kind of improving on that. And I kind of loved the whole switch of my mindset, not looking at the weight on the scales, but like looking at the weight gain on the bar all the time. And it was like mini challenges, and I loved it. And I just find for myself, in terms of hiking and living life, I just feel stronger and faster, and I move so much better. Oh my God, you know, like I can move without any pain. And, you know, I had a hairline fracture when I was 23 from overrunning and just being underweight.
Yeah, it just shows the amount of benefits that you'll get from it, from feeling better, not to mention the longevity that you touched on already, performance elements for hiking, body composition, you know, even the body composition side. And just to clarify, just in case you didn't pick up on Roz's tone, lifting weights doesn't make you big and bulky. That just for anyone that's listening to this who's in that, oh wait,
you know, I used to have trainers who used to be like, no, you cannot, like they'd be having me lifting like 2 kg weights, and I did that for years, and I look back and I'm like, would someone not have like dragged, like that's one thing I also wish I could tell myself, like lift heavier weights and understand that lifting weights will not make you bulky. It'll make you strong, especially if you do strength workout, and it'll hopefully, if you're with the right person or if you take time to learn, it'll just help you move better.
I love that, and it's so true. Roz, I'm running a couple of more questions that I kind of want to pick your brain on. I've loved this conversation. As I said, for everybody that is, a lot of people following your content already, for those who aren't, I highly recommend checking out, you know, the website, which I'll link, the Instagram page, all the social media channels. But I want to ask, you have quite a wide reach on social media as it is, you know, over 500,000 followers on Instagram across different channels and platforms. But if you could send out a message to everybody on Instagram who is into wellness or into health, or even off the back of this conversation, people who have struggled with diet culture or even some form of disordered eating. Again, I know that's a massively wide spectrum, but if you could put up a post on Instagram that hits absolutely everybody in that space who has an account, what would you say?
I think when it comes to like health and wellness, we're all looking to be told what to do. We just want someone to label what we need to do every single day, and someone to say, you know, eat this for that, take this for sleep. What I would say to people, and it's something I know I just had to take a step away from and do, it was start thinking about what you want, how things make you feel, and not trying to emulate someone else's lifestyle, not try to look for an easy 5-step thing or look for a quick fix. You need to start back with everything in life. You need to go back and start in your own house. How does each food make you feel? And by that, I mean, like not keeping a food diary, like, you know, you don't need to track what you eat, but keeping a diary with how you feel when you do certain things, taking the time to find an exercise, find a movement that makes that you enjoy, that you're going to keep it up. Like the whole thing about, I'm always a bit weird using like health and wellness because I do feel like it's these buzzwords, but I think the whole thing really, it just comes down to is creating habits that ultimately lead you to live a better life. And that's not, someone's not going to come and tell you what that is. You need to take time and find it.
What's a, and again, I wasn't going to ask this, but just because you brought up habits there is something I'm very interested in as well, and long-term listeners will know. What's a recent habit that you've adopted that's had a positive benefit in your life? And I know this is a very funny time in the world, you know, 2020, 2021, you know, I've had to create habits and do things because of lockdowns and restrictions that I probably would never do just to kind of stay on top of my mental health more than anything. But what's a recent habit in the last, you know, pre-2020 or since 2020 that you've adopted that's had a very positive impact on your life?
So one thing about me, and I don't talk about this much, and it's probably like my hidden thing, is I'm actually quite messy. I'm messy in a physical sense. When it comes to work and organizing, or if we're going away together, I'll have like a full itinerary. So I'm very routined with my hour by hour day. But when it comes to the spaces that I live in, they can be quite chaotic. And I think we all know trying to work in a space that's filled with stuff isn't good for for a clear head. It's not good for working. And it's something that I think I feel I wish I was better at. You know, I'm just not, I was never someone who naturally, you know, just tidied up or made the bed when they got out of it in the morning. So one thing that I've been doing over the last few months, and it was actually from a book, Atomic Habits, that's been really, that's kind of my approach to habits now, is every time I go to leave a room, I take 2 minutes to clean it up. So it's basically like you're hopefully leaving it as you found it. And 2 minutes, such a short space of time. I literally just set an alarm for 2 minutes. And it just means that every time I leave a room, I do something. And my approach to cleaning before was always very much like, I think when it comes to almost like food, like binging and purging, like I would do these massive cleanups, but then they would just get naturally met habits. I'd still be kind of flinging clothes everywhere and bringing bags in and not unpacking them. So by taking these 2 minutes, it's not 2 minutes a day, it's every 2 minutes when I leave a room, like I leave my office or I leave the living room, I just do 2 minutes of cleaning up, whether that's like 2 minutes to empty the dishwasher or 2 minutes. It's such a short space of time, but at the end of the day accumulates a lot, and it ends up giving me free time, a lot more free time spending these massive cleanups. So that's something that I've adopted in the last kind of couple of weeks, couple of months. And once again, when it comes to habits, I don't know if you've read the book Atomic Habits. It's fantastic.
It's a great book. Yeah, it's an absolute fantastic book. I'm going to have James on the podcast. It's James Clear, I think, that's the author of that book. We've been talking back and forth the odd time trying to get that set up. Absolutely love that book and highly recommend it to people as well. Roz, I just have one final question. As I said, love this conversation. So much great stuff here. But you're doing lots of different things. I know you're between traveling and the hiking and, you know, the multiple cookbooks and the content online. But what's the thing you're most excited about right now?
That's a really hard question. And you know what? It's funny because I was actually thinking about this earlier. Like I'm always someone who has lots going on. You know, I have my finger in lots of different pies. And, you know, before I used to always think that was a bad thing. I used to think you don't want to be a jack of all trades. You want to pick one thing and master it. But I think getting to know myself, and actually what I was saying earlier, like start thinking about what you enjoy and stop trying to live a life that someone else says is the best way to live a life. Like we're not all going to follow the same path in life. What brings me joy is actually working on different topics and different elements. And I think for me, that's just always going to be my personality. Doing one thing never fulfills me. But I have to say the biggest thing I'm looking forward to this year is spending, this might sound really cheesy again, but I actually have just been working really hard in finding like real, God, I'm like, oh God, rolling my eyes at myself, but there's so much work stuff going on. And I'm someone that I put work first. Like when it comes to work, I'm extremely driven. I love having goals, but when it comes to life, I'm not that good at it. And by life, I mean relationships. I mean, day to day, just, I think, what would I call it? Kind of, like, you know, just general your life and your milestones as a person. And that's something I've been working really hard on, and like trying to find content in life outside of work. and finding the joy in like everyday things. And I feel like I'm in a pretty good headspace with it now. And I'm actually really looking forward to like being extremely happy with the idea that work won't always be there for me. And it's like you. We live in this, I'm sorry, I don't mean for you, but like we live in a social media world, and like I know you have a lot going on outside it, but we won't always have the work as we know it now. So you need to make sure that you're really happy with everything else you have and your life as you and who you are in the world, and like making sure you know where your space is. And that's definitely something I'm just enjoying doing at the moment, and I'm really looking forward to exploring that more this year.
I love that. Such an amazing way to finish. And one of the things that I've tried to do with my social media, because I have a very separate offline to online, like I don't put my daughter online, I don't put my partner online, I don't put my family's actually nowhere on my social media channels, so I have quite a split from it. But I've always just tried to make my version, a little tiny space of the internet, a little bit more positive, because there's enough negativity out there. And I think yours is the epitome of that. As I said, for anybody who's struggling with body confidence, who just wants ideas with recipes or hikes, there's so much on your channel. So I highly recommend anybody who's not following you already to go and do that. But Roz, for everyone that's listening, where's the best place for them to connect with you? Is it through Instagram? Is that where you want people to follow your page? And where can they pick up the books and check out all the hikes and everything you're doing? Where's the best place to send people?
Listen, I'm terrible at selling things. So I'm like, you know what? You know, pick up a book if you fancy picking up a book. But find me on Instagram at Rosanna Purcell. And if you want to know more about hikes, I have a page called The Hike Life. We run free community hikes every couple of weeks. And there's always loads of events on. So come along to one.
And for everybody listening, I will put all of that in the show notes on BrianKeenFitness.com and in the description wherever you're listening to podcasts, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, etc. Click on through, pick up a book, hit the follow button on Instagram, check out the pages, check out the website. Roz, keep inspiring, keep doing what you're doing with that positive message. I absolutely love it, and thank you even more for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
There you have it, Roz Purcell on the problem with diet culture, disordered eating, and creating a positive relationship with yourself. Loved this podcast episode, loved this conversation. So grateful we got to have it. Roz has been on my list of people to talk to on the podcast for quite a while now, so really glad we got to have this chat. Also, for those of you who are subscribed to my email newsletter, as normal on Thursday, I will send you my top 3 takeaways from today's podcast. If you're not subscribed to my newsletter and you'd like to do so, you want to get my takeaways every week, every Thursday, my top 3 ones from each podcast, just head over to BrianKeenFitness.com, scroll on the homepage to the newsletter, and just pop your email in there. That will come out every single Thursday. That's everything from this week. Catch you all next Monday.